Okay, hello, I am Andreas Kupris. As you already said, I'm one of the old fogies who started with Tickle in the late 90s, Tickle 7.3 or something. And today I'm here to talk about an image processing extension I have played with and written on in the last 2 years, not continuously, of course. And it is, as usual, MIT BSD licensed. And I am actually mixing C and Tickle using Jean-Claude Wippler's critical thing, which I am currently also the maintainer of. So there's actually quite a lot of stuff in there which expands the abilities of critical, but I won't talk about that here. And yeah, the name is basically Andreas Kupris Tickle Image Vector Extension, very self-promoting, but it's a nicer name than the image processing I did about 2015, 10 years ago, which was the critical image processor, which is CRIMP. So active is much nicer, I guess. It was inspired by VIPS, which is a C-based image processing library, but the main thing I have taken from it is actually just the basic idea of demand-driven horizontal threading and lazy construction of things, which basically means when you create an image, let's say you have an image and you put an operator on top of it and another operator and so on, you are actually creating a pipeline which doesn't do anything, and only when you need the pixels, then it actually spawns the necessary threads to process the pixels and actually pixel regions, so it doesn't have to pull the entire image into memory, just the regions it is currently working on. The internals of Active are actually completely different in terms of data structures. Nothing is truly is copied from VIPS, only the idea, basically. Another difference is, for example, VIPS provides image operations for images which are bytes, short integers, floats, doubles. I am only using double as the internal data type, much easier. You have only the conversion at the beginning from int to double or from double to int at the end when you're writing something out. And of course, I am wedded to Tickle, whereas VIPS is actually wedded to GNOME. They have this G-object, G-class system, which is pseudo-object-oriented, and I don't have a truck with that. And another thing is, which also started Active, was to see how far can I go with code generation, basically. And actually, you can get very far. And yeah, as I already said, experiment in code generation. And I basically have a domain-specific language, the operator specs, and I translate it into the C parts into the Tickle parts, actually. And with this, actually, I started to generate the documentation from the specs as well, examples from the specs, and so on. If you truly want to see that in full, you have to actually go to the website of Active and see what there is. And yeah, we have the three parts: C, Tickle, and Critical, and I am using all of them. What they are good for, basically the C parts are where we get the speed from. Tickle is used for various high-level parts that we will see later a bit. And with Critical, I can mix them nicely together without complications. regarding input-output, I'm actually so far quite limited. I can read and write the PBM and PGM formats, both binary and text. And I have, of course, it's image processing. Everybody has to have their own format, so there's the active image format as well. And the thing is, as I can create PPM and PGM not just as files or sockets or whatever, I can also generate them as strings MTK takes PPM, PGM as strings, the dash data option. So I can use that to feed my stuff into TK, basically TK photo images. I don't have to do it in C, which is then a pain in CRIMP, in the old CRIMP. It was basically done in C, and it was really a pain, even if you have a bit of stubs around. Yeah. And with that, I am now, let's see a bit of how things look like. I will gloss over quite a lot of things. This is basically one of the simplest things, like an unary operation, which transforms an image into another image, into another image using the apps function, so negative values become positive, positive stay the same. And you see basically the section of a documentation where it goes into. The nodes are the documentation that describes the operator. This operator has no parameters, so we don't see anything about that here. And normally the parameters have a type and also documentation, which is, goes into the documentation. You also don't see an example here, which would normally the case. The only thing I left from the higher, from the more advanced stuff are simplification rules, which are basically people optimizations applied at construction time. In this case, the apps operator is idempotent. If you do an apps on an image and stack more apps on it, it's the same, basically. Apps of an image is same as apps image. And the first rule basically looks, oh, the input is already an apps. In that case, return that input and don't do anything. And the second thing is a simplification. Oh, the input is a constant image. Okay, apply the apps to the single constant and return a constant again. And at that point, basically at runtime, this deletes quite a lot of stuff at runtime. Similar things are done when operations cancel each other out, like if you negate an image and negate it again, you have the image again, so you don't need any of the two operations. And underneath that, the state, that is basically the construction time setup. Here we see that the image, the input geometry is copied into the operator because the result image has the same geometry as the input. And the pixel stuff is then where the pixels are processed. In this case, a standard runtime function, the blit unary zero, which applies the fapps operation to the region it fetched from the input, basically. And after generation, we have first, at the high level, glue code, which is tickle code, which runs the simplification stuff, basically also still in tickle. That is the tickle parts of the runtime. And it looks quite similar to the actual simplification we had at the top, but not quite. There's only a slight translation there. And after that, then it calls the IAPS operator to basically, perform the actual processing. What important here is that the simplify do use return, dash code return, either when something fails or when they say, oh, I'm triggered, I have to do this. In that case, the IAPS is simply not called. So this is a bit, you don't see it. You have to know this, you don't see it here explicitly. And if we go now one level deeper to the IAPS, that is now where we have critical. It looks sort of like tickle, but there's actually C. And here we see there are no parameters, so it simply calls the construction function for the new operator, which is and returns the resulting image. And the construction operator takes, normally these operators take all the parameters, stuff it into a structure, and then call the runtime function, the generic runtime function to construct something. And here we need only the type definition, which is essentially the name of operator, various function vectors, and this is then stuffed into the generic image structure and returned as such. And here we have a setup and region fetch vectors, and these are the state and pixel things we saw in the DSL at the top. Here we see basically between the bit lines, that is the code we saw in the DSL, and everything around that is generated boilerplate. And mainly bringing in various things the code needs from the internal arguments. Similar here, we have the region fetch thing. This is actually primed down. You see the bracketed dots. There are actually more trace commands which we don't need here for this talk, basically. And here again, between these two, we have the information from the DSL. And with that, this was just a very small peek into the internals of how things are done with the code generation. The interesting thing here is, for example, the runtime is only just about 10%, that is both C and Tickle. The DSL implementation is just 5%, and the operators written in the DSL are 15%, and then we have lots of generated code, basically 70%, 7 of 10 lines. This is generated C and Tickle code and generated documentation. So this was really quite far. So for the demo, it is actually still slides. There's no interactive running of a Tickle script like Rolf did. On the other hand, the Tickle script I used to generate the demonstration, all the intermediate images and so on for the presentation, actually at the end got another phase, do HTML, and then it spit out the presentation. And this got a bit of extensions so that I have all the static parts at the front and at the end, and this, for example, is part of the static things, but everything which comes after has images generated by TickleScript, and the logo is actually also generated with an active extension. And going to the task, basically for myself, I'm digitizing my own books. And instead of using a scanner or cutting up books, I use a simple camera. You could do it here with smartphones, but I use a regular camera. And when you have a page in the image and you want to get the page out of the image, hopefully corrected in the sense that it is upright and straight and things like that. And the complication is that you may have part of the opposite page if you don't shoot double pages. And for me, that isn't a complication. So, and for copyright stuff and so on, the single image here is from a math book, Geometry 2, which is basically a school book. And the Tickle, this is also Tickle with properties in general for another project, basically part of project data I maintain for each book I shoot. And as an input, we now have here the book page, and you see you have a page, and you have a partial page from the opposite page, and in between both you have what the book people call the gutter, and it has nothing to do with a grand unified Tickle TK extension repository. And as a first thing, we basically scale things down. We have then here the resize operation, which my factor is actually 4, so I return a quarter size image for that. And looking into the resize operator, you see here actually this one has parameters, so we are validating various parameters. We collect the required parameters, and this ensures that these exist. then we also collect the optional parameters and set actually the default. In this case, it is bilinear for the interpolation method. And then this is actually also this is also an image or operator which is implemented in Tickle itself. And what I demonstrated at the beginning, the apps operator, that was basically C. And here I compute now the scales. I compute the affine transformation, which is here just a scaling, and transform it down. And at the end, I have to make sure that because scaling is a bit floating point and so on, it may not exactly match, so we get a viewport on top of it which makes sure that it actually has the desired size, even if the result of a transformation itself is off by fractions of pixels. And yeah, okay, at this point the image is smaller, but otherwise you don't see it here because it's in the slides, it's simply automatically scaled by the browser to the same visual size. And after that, we want to convert it to grayscale. This is a color space transformation going from sRGB to grayscale. And actually, I have a number of color space transformations here. You see a nice graphic. The sRGB is usually what we assume to have when we read PPM image. Some of them are actually bidirectional, others are actually one way. And I see here I have an error in the image because sRGB to gray should be one way. You can't go from gray back to color. Sorry about that. Here is also important this people optimizations about things which cancel each other. If I go from sRGB to HSV and from HSV back to sRGB, the two transformations cancel out and nothing is done. Okay, we are now at grayscale, and now we have to do a bit more. I am going to black and white bits and use something, Fransalka thresholding, which is called generally local adaptive thresholding. It looks at the image in a window and computes basically the mean and the standard deviation, and then does a very complex math formula with parameters and so on to decide if that pixel is basically foreground or background. And because this is pulled by the script generating the presentation directly out of the sources, info body, all the line breaks, continuation lines you have in the original are not available here, and that is why it goes off a screen. And the Fransalka thresholding is actually a variant of Savola, a variant of Niblack, and there's a blog post you can basically go to if you want to know more about that one. And now that we have binarized, it looks like this. And as the next step, yeah, we want to extract the page, we want to know where the page is, we are looking for page borders. And in this case, what I am doing is something called the internal gradient. This is a morphological image processing application. And this is basically you erode the image and then you subtract the erosion from the original image, and what is left are the borderlines. There are possible issues with that. With the example I have here, I have basically text with a lots of white background around it. There are books like picture books and so on. They are full of color to the border of a page. And right now I can say, yeah, that is not handled very well by this algorithm. And I am currently looking into ways of making better, like looking for edges in color space directly instead of grayscale and binarizing, or where things like decolorization, which is a method of transforming to grayscale, where color edges are still represented, sort of, or better represented. But that is also not really the topic here. And yeah, now we have the borders. What is the page here? Well, what I use here is connected components, also called labeled regions. This is actually here two operations I use, one to find the connected components, and in this case, for the debugging, I take the connected components and transform them into ranges, and this shows me then the result, what is what are the components. The main thing here is that I look at the connected components and I select the one with the largest area, basically. And for the debugging, we will see then what that is. And that is pretty much the page border, except, of course, we have also from the opposite page pieces of it. Yeah. And this here is now purely for visualization and debugging. I basically take the border thing, the border image, and I colorize it yellow and overlay it over the original image. And basically I do a morph deletion and use an operator called if then else to basically select, do I want to have the first image or the second image based on the third image, which is in this case the border thing. And the color stuff, that is a constant, yellow, so color yellow, and that is an image form color, that is a constant with, in this case it takes the color as a name, and I have a small database which basically knows all the CSS colors, and you feed in the name, in this case yellow, and you get the RGB data for that back and can use it. This is also, the important thing here is that we have here the active color band image, which is a constant image, and the fact it stores only the information about the geometry and the color, but it doesn't store any of the pixels. The thing is, it has a fetch operation which says, if you want to have a pixels for this region, it simply returns the region full with that color. But beyond that, it is a virtual image. It doesn't have all the pixels in memory, regardless of size. Yeah, and that looks then like this. And there's actually another interesting point here. If you have something like more color stuff and so on, this can look not as nice as it looks here with only bits pushing in. And this is also a place where currently issues can happen, basically. But at this point, what I'm using is an operation which is definitely snuffed from VIPS. They call it a profile operation. You have an image, and for the left profiler, you basically say for each row, how far away is the first non-zero pixel from the left border, and that is the value. And this basically gives you a series of numbers, which is the profiler of the image from the left, and you can do the same thing from the top, bottom, and right. If you have it from the left, you have basically x coordinates. You add epsilon coordinates, and then you have a nice path which describes basically the border you are looking at. What I have here as a second thing is the draw poly. This is basically drawing a polyline, and which makes use of signed distance fields to actually generate the pixel information. With signed distance fields, you know, you have, let's say, the parameter of a circle, and it can tell you for each pixel coordinates, is that pixel outside, inside, outside of a circle, inside, or on the border of it, and they can compute it concurrently in parallel, which is the best thing for something like horizontal threaded, because all the threads are independent. There's nothing to look around for. And this is all the SDF stuff I have in active is from more or less from Inigo Quiles, and there's a page he has about lots of 2D distance functions. And here we have a left profiler. And from there, I originally had a find threshold using Otsu, and I replaced that basically just go in the middle by half. What you see here is basically fitting the image with min max into the 0-1 range, get the metadata, which gives us the parameters of the fitting, and then you do the Otsu threshold and basically return things back. But as I said, in the end, I went only with threshold half in the middle of the thing because it was good enough. So here you have the threshold in the middle. And when you apply the threshold, that is also trivial to do. So I don't even go deeper into things. And when you have basically the profile in itself, at this point we are mostly in outside of image processing because we have a path. We have a path of a left profiler, which is a 2D path of 2D points, and. There's nothing with rasters to do, so at this point the only way for active here is a visualization of an intermediate result so that I and you can see basically what the thing is doing while it is trying to find things. And I have here the left profiler, and what I do is ransack I use a ransack basically to find the parameters for this line basically. And what I talk here about hugging and so on, that is basically for the other side for the partial page, because there the line is basically at the image borders hugging the image border. And yeah, and then you have a line, and this now looks like this. And when you do it for the right side, you have it actually on the opposite page, because we haven't tried to look for the gutter yet. And you do the same thing also for the top profiler and the bottom profiler. And the top profiler, it looks sort of a bit like the left profile. The page is not straight. It is actually lightly skewed, and because of that, you have still basically here at the left side, you see part of the left thing, a cliff basically. That is also important in the details of the processing. And yeah, basically, I cut things horizontally based on the cliff information and the slopes and all that. And then the first refinement gives us this top profiler, basically. And to search for gutter, again, there's nothing about image processing here. I basically put a line from the beginning to the end, and then I subtract the profile from that line. And at this point, the gutter is pretty much the maximum of things. It looks like a minimum, but remember, the zero is at the top and goes downward. So we have here the maximum, and then that is where the gutter basically is. And then we can basically cut things again and have the actual refined top profiler. And here we have left. And with that, we can also refine the left and right profile. Now the right profile is on the gutter. and show all the things we have left and right. I could have, linear lines and the top and bottom profile nicely curved. And from there, basically, for the left and right, I could use Ransack to find nicely linear things. For the top and bottom, I can't do that because I want to be below that and above that, and generally with a Ransack you would have it in going through things. So what I actually do is I collect tangents to these things, and what you see here is actually I use something, an external tool like QConvex, to simplify things, get the convex hull of a thing, and then do pairs of points, filter down for lines which are above or below, and make it unique. Without the QConvex, I would have about 600 points squared. So even in Tickle, that takes a long time. With QConvex, it is maybe 60 points, and 60 squared, okay, that is doable, basically. And when you do that here, just for the top profiler, you are left with these tangents. And we want to find the best fitting one, which is actually the tangent which has the minimum area below between it and the actual profiler. And that is then what you do with the choosing. And here we have basically results. What?
Everything is very simple.
Very simple. And you see all the tangents and the chosen one. And at that point, you can, with the tangents, you can basically have a box now. It's actually not a box. It is, generally speaking, what is called a quadrilateral. In this case, it is a bit of a rhombus or trapeze. No, not a rhombus, a trapeze. But the general form is quadrilateral, short quad. And now we fit that. We take all the lines. We find the intersection points. And then we have this quadrilateral, which tells us where the page is. So here's this with a border. And the next step is then rectification. We have a quadrilateral, and we want things to be straight and rectangular. So we have here, again, lots of affine transformations. Transform a quadrilateral to the unit quad, invert this, scale it, and compose these affine transformations into a single one, and then transform the, in this case, the transform points is basically not an image processing operation, but rather, again, the 2D paths are transformed, that is for the debugging. The interesting point, at the end, there's the viewport, which is put on top of it. In the beginning with the scaling, I explained it. We need it for the fractional points. Here, we need it actually to get the region of interest instead of everything else. Let's see if I can do this. I have made a link into the active documentation. This is also this quadrilateral transformations. At the left, we have the input image and we have the quadrilateral. And when we transform it as is, you see here's the region of interest and you have lots else, basically. It goes very far. And with a viewport, we then focus on this one, on this small part we actually want. And this is also an example of examples I can put into the DSL and which is then put into the documentation for me. So let's go back to this. Yeah, and at the end, now we have a rectified page. It is not perfect. We still have some curves, basically residual curves. This is something I have not worked on yet. This is basically at the point what I used in the past manually, basically. Look at the page, set the points, and rectify it this way. So it is equivalent to what I did by hand, but now it's done automatically. And in this specific book, actually, it was 100% perfect. Normally, depending on the book, it is maybe between 80% or 10% perfect. And 10%, this is when you have lots of pictures in the book, especially pictures which go to the border of a page. Yeah, and yeah, you can roughly see here the residuals in blue and red. And but we are basically at the point. Yeah, this is now my tool, where which I use for the digitalization of my books. And you see basically at the left the list of images. You have a picture, some stuff to basically classify the page and stuff like that, just for the context. And then you have a rectified thing basically in it, or with a rectification basically also binarized. This is much smaller and then easy to export. Here is again the catalog information for the book, mainly at the left. This book I digitized last September in 15 minutes. So I am coming more or less to the end of my talk. There's a lot of future work to be done, first in the general, on Inactive itself. I still have to do actually benchmarking. It works very well with multi-threading, basically, for things like that and what I'm using it for. However, I have seen when the images get smaller, the setup, the time to set up the multi-threading and so on, becomes more than the time needed to actually process the small amount of pixels. So, and I have to find out where exactly is the breaking point, and it's also dependent on the shape of the image. In the images like this, they are rectangular sort of, but you can have also images which are a single line, very long, or an image which is just a single column, very deep. And I have already seen that in these cases the multi-threaded stuff becomes bad. And other things to do, I don't have the FFT yet, Hood transformation. Hit-miss transform is another morphological operator. Maybe support more file formats. Matrix operations like matrix multiplication, matrix vector multiplication. I mean, it's in the name, it is not just images. I also want vectors and stuff like that. And this image smoothing I have here with Link, that is, was something I have in CRIMP. This is a smoothing operation which is edge aware and can basically smooth between the edges while keeping the edges. So this is very high level. I will need the FFT for that. And on the demo task itself, I already mentioned color edges maybe for better borders. There's this residual signature I have to get rid of. And when I have this rectified and so on, detect the blank pages, detect where are text regions versus image regions so that I can actually pick up the images itself. And then very high level OCR. That would most likely be then something, here are the text regions, and then shuffle it over to an external tool like
Sorry, Andreas, we have to come to an end.
That is okay. Yeah. And I am pretty much at the end.
Yeah. Andreas. The pause because we are waiting for that. It was nearly 40 minutes, so sorry for that. But it was really interesting, so, yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Filling out what is the best combination, basically.
In OSA, you can do scripts, you can learn many of things about this, because you can start from scratch.
Yeah.
Dive.
Yeah.
You can look at the script is part of the presentation, the 3D and so on, the presentation is generated by the presentation for a single image, you can point the script as at a directory of images and it will generate presentations for each fan.
There is one comment from Donald Fellows in the chat. He says, Kevin Kenney would have had fun with this. And he says also Major Lavery is very into this sort of thing at massive scale with a large class set of the image processing.
Yeah. Most likely also like LibVibs. I haven't actually done things like synth vector processing or stuff like that, which I could possibly also figure out maybe at some point, but that would then be very platform specific. I mean, we have the Intel AVX, we have ARM Neo, ARM Irgendwas, and so on and so forth. And I didn't bother with all that until I had actually the basics.